life is a portage between one great abyss to another great abyss. This book is about making that portage and being active in the portage and not just watching it happen to you.
That's Minnesota writer and paddler Sue Leaf. I am Jim Gallagher, and you are listening to Paddle Minnesota on Northern Community Radio. Today on Paddle Minnesota, I talk with Sue about her memoir, Portage, A Family, A Canoe, and The Search for the Good Life. Sue is the author of three other books as well. Two were finalists for Minnesota Book Awards. In Portage, Sue's compiled a lifetime of travel stories and accounts that center around canoeing. Sue, thanks for talking with us today.
I'm so happy to be with you.
If I've counted correctly, you've written about 28 trips and outings in this memoir. Can you tell us about a few of those rivers and routes that you've paddled with your husband and family?
Well, we start from our home base in Center City, which is in east central Minnesota, and we look out from there and think, which rivers do we see every day or frequently as we drive around that we haven't been on that might take us into interesting parts of the country that we haven't seen before? So one river that we paddle a lot is the lovely St. Croix River, the border river between Minnesota and Wisconsin. We have our favorite paddles on that river, short segments that we can do in a day or in like an afternoon. And then we look farther north. We look at the Kettle. We look at the Snake. We have paddled the Rum, which leaves Lake Mille Lacs and does kind of a circuitous route down to the Mississippi. That is a really interesting little river. The DNR has been really good about laying out boat landings that you can launch a canoe from and maps that you can see how you access these boat landings and how many river miles are involved. And so we go online, we look at what rivers are doable, and we choose one for an afternoon.
Some of your trips have been multi-day trips. Obviously, they're not all day trips, but what I liked about your book is that you could write about short trips, in some cases very urban places, and really bring out the interesting things that a paddler might see in those rather urban environments or in familiar stretches of river.
Well, I think what is interesting is once you get on a river, almost always the banks are wooded or vegetated in some way, so that even if it's developed up to the very edge of the riverbank, you don't see that. And it's not just in urban areas. I would say in the agricultural areas, that land is as dominated by human presence as an urban area is. And yet on a river, it's easy for you to imagine that you are seeing a fairly pristine landscape. So there's kind of a little like a fantasy going on, I think, with us, where we launch on the river and we pretend we are seeing it for the first time before human beings have really put a heavy presence on it.
As well as paddling through some very urban areas, you've paddled some bona fide wilderness routes. Tell me about some of those wilderness routes that you and your husband have traveled.
The first one that comes to mind was one we did fairly early in our marriage. A lot of our several day trips occur in June around our wedding anniversary, when we can take time off and we could cajole grandparents into taking care of our children. So we headed away from Minnesota on those trips, and the one I'm thinking of right away is the one that took us on the Missouri River in central Montana through the Missouri Breaks. It's rangeland. It's also, I think it's national grasslands, and some of it's a wilderness area. We went through a bad storm there, and we did not see anyone for several days. After the storm, we were quite rattled, and we wanted to abort the trip, but there was no way to get out of it. We had to go right down the river to meet the outfitter at the landing, as arranged.
I enjoyed that story. There was a lot of unexpected things that happened to you and your husband, and that, to me, is the heart of travel, is taking on what you're given in your travel and making the best of it. It seemed like you guys did that very well.
Well, and you know what's funny about that trip is even though it was a scare, and I do recall vividly, we couldn't eat supper that night because the storm was so intense, and we ate lentil soup for breakfast that morning. What I remember most vividly of the trip is I saw my first yellow-breasted chat at a canoe site where Lewis and Clark had camped, and it was standing waist-deep in blooming wild roses. So that imagery of the beautiful yellow-breasted chat and the wild roses is foremost in my mind. The chat came a day or two after the storm, and so it piled on that experience and maybe partly erased it.
you talked about the meaning of wilderness and what that was in reality, and the wilderness is a state of mind. Explain that a little bit.
I know there's been quite a bit of thought gone into the concept of wilderness and how Native Americans didn't have such a concept, that the whole world was their home. And there wasn't a civilized or a settled portion and an unsettled portion. So it's kind of a mental construct to begin with. My concept of wilderness has to do with being reliant on yourself and the people you are with out in the world, and having an element of danger, and realizing that you have the tools to ward it off and keep yourself safe and experience the world without any filters, without any the filter of knowing you have a rescue squad within a 3-minute call. The idea that you could have a very small patch of woods and still find it a wilderness, I think that's kind of a consoling idea. As the world becomes more and more peopled with our billions, that there are places, even very close to you, that are still wild. Within all living things, there's a little bit of wild, or sometimes a lot of wild, that's just not controllable by people.
You're listening to Paddle Minnesota on Northern Community Radio. Clearly, you like to keep a journal. What was the point when you realized there might be a book in your journaled adventures?
I really didn't think about writing a book about these canoe trips until, maybe 2 years, 3 years ago. Through all the journals I was using as material for the book, I just wrote them because I wanted to record the experience. After I finished my third book, A Love Affair with Birds, that was a book that took a lot of research in the Twin Cities. It required me to drive 45 miles every day to get to a library. And I was so tired of commuting to the Twin Cities that I swore that the next book I wrote, I would write at my desk. A book on canoe trips kind of lent itself well to that, because most of my most significant source were my journals, and then my second source were my husband's slide photos that he had taken. I was able to sit at my desk and write these essays looking at the photos he had taken using my journals and then what I could find off the internet to bolster the essays.
I'm curious, were those photos helpful? Did they help you recall those trips?
Very much. And not only that, but what's most interesting in the photo to me, if I'm going to use it for my writing, is not what the photo was focused on, but the background. And if you look at the background, you can think, oh, yeah, there were cottonwoods in that at that campsite. I don't remember that. You see that there are prairie flowers blooming, and you didn't remember that, and it didn't mention it in the journal, and so that you can put it into your writing.
A part of the process I hadn't thought about, I think about pulling my journals out, and I hadn't thought about rolling in that piece of jogging my memory with photos.
With writing down an experience, it can be kind of a trap, because then your experience becomes what you wrote. What else happens that you didn't write about seems to disappear. Another source, like someone else's journal or a photograph, might bring back a forgotten memory that you hadn't originally recorded.
Were there things that you had to leave out of your writing or this book, this memoir, and would you do that differently next time?
You know, what I left out of the book that I think I would do differently if I were to rewrite it is the biggest arc of the story. I didn't really realize what it was until I was writing the introduction. And when it finally came out, I thought, oh, yeah, that's what this is about. And that greater arc of the story was that there are different ways of being in this world, and one way is to be a spectator. And I realized that when I was a child, my parents approached the world as kind of spectators. I think that generation often did. For example, we went to the Grand Canyon. We never hiked into the Grand Canyon. We just stood on the rim, and not very close at that because that was dangerous, and looked. I didn't want to live life that way, and a canoe was a way for me to get into the world and not be a spectator. And I think had I realized that when I was putting these essays together, I think more of them would come out in that essay.
I remember that bit of writing in the intro. I like that concept, that idea of being a participant in your own life, and I thought that was well written. at one point, maybe at several points in some of those later chapters, you sort of reflect on that idea of time running out. Tell me more about that.
The later chapters, we began picking up on the theme of aging because our bodies were changing. We flirted with the idea of getting a Kevlar canoe. We began to notice that, you know, it was harder to, in the morning when you got up out of it, sleeping on the ground in a tent, your body was stiffer than it was when it was 25. So it's kind of unsettling, and I think that's why rivers are more attractive now to us than lakes that entail portages as well, because portages are tougher than a paddle on a waterway.
Is that how you came up with the title Portage?
My editor chose the title Portage and really liked it. And I wasn't sold on that title because, of course, the book is not about portages. The book is about paddling, the interludes between portages. But then I realized that in a metaphorical sense, that life is a portage between one great abyss to another great abyss. This book is about making that portage and being active in the portage and not just watching it happen to you.
Well, Sue, you've written a really nice book. Thank you for sharing some stories about the book with us today. And where is your book available?
It's available at all bookstores. And it should be available at the independent booksellers stores. And you can get it online. And you can get ebooks online also.
That's Minnesota writer and paddler Sue Leaf. Here's Sue reading from her memoir, Portage, A Family, A Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life.
When one becomes immersed in the landscape of an unfamiliar world, the tick of a clock is forgotten. The position of the sun in the sky, the status of stomachs that are either satisfied or empty, the level of a river that depends on rainfall are all more reliable indicators of exactly how much time is passing and how much remains. That a moment can expand to assume significance is wisdom I will remember as we sense our time is running out.